This is a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 12th in a series of interviews with security gurus. Today is a change of pace for Silver Bullet, as I'll actually be doing a live interview instead of using a phone line. I'm pleased to be sitting next to Becky Bass. Hi, Becky.
Hello.
One of the luminaries of computer security. Becky is a VC now with Trident Capital out of Palo Alto. She grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, and spent 12 years at the NSA from 1984 to 1996, where her work focused on intrusion detection and cryptography. After that, she did a stint at Los Alamos National Labs. Now she lives some of the time in Baltimore and part of the time in California, and I guess part of the time on airplanes, too. I'm always pleased to come across security gurus who grew up in the country. Did your experiences as a girl blowing stumps up with ammonium nitrate have any impact on your choice of computer security as a career?
aside from fostering a sense of enjoying the perverse, I suspect it probably did. Actually, I think there's an aspect of security and insecurity that kind of marks the evolution, I think, of folks who end up in security, in that at some point you're interested in how things fail.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, explosives push that envelope
in interesting ways. They help things fail more quickly.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of people in computer security that you and I both know are sort of into explosives and firearms and stuff like that.
Well, it's fun. I remember looking in the early, chatting with folks in the earlier days when I first got involved in security in the mid to late 80s. And it seemed that most had almost an orderly progression into information security. Mm-hmm. Most folks reported that they were ham radio operators early on. They got enchanted with the whole notion of coding.
Right.
And then they developed an avid interest in picking locks.
Mm-hmm.
So we were far enough out in the woods and far enough removed from ham radio operators that aside from the occasional king, I didn't really get enchanted with that. But I did love to pick locks. So.
There you go.
So it was part of that contingent in terms of that set of interests.
So I guess one of the other things that got you started was being sent to college by the Teamsters, which is an interesting story. Maybe you can tell us that. And where'd you end up going to college?
Oh, actually, originally I went to Alabama and Birmingham, mm-hmm. and that was sort of a hurry-up situation. I came from rather humble means, large family, single wage earner, and wasn't particularly clear that I would go to college immediately. Mm-hmm. It looked as if I was going to take a year or two out and work to afford tuition.
Right.
And lo and behold, not only the Teamsters, but also General Mills, of all people, anteed up scholarships sort of at the last minute that allowed me to go to college.
That's great. And you said you discovered math and that was all she wrote.
Yeah, absolutely. I went in believing that I was going to do something reasonably nailed down compared to computer security. I was actually going to be a medical records administrator or some such.
I see.
And got waylaid on the way.
Yeah, well, that seems like a decent sort of a waylay.
Yeah, probably so. It was fun. I remember going into the guidance counselor and the guy telling me that's the first time in my career I have ever been encountered by anyone coming in the door and saying, I want to sign up for a major that requires more math, not less.
Right, right.
Well,
that's very interesting. I bet you back then, you know, really, if you wanted to study things like computer security and cryptography, you had to do math. And there wasn't probably much offered in terms of courses about computer security.
No, I mean at that point, actually, the college and undergraduate school, there was no such thing as a computer degree, mm-hmm. a computer major, let alone a computer security
exactly.
major.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've come a long way, I guess. In some ways, I think that's good because we can come up with a curriculum that we can all sort of agree is stuff mm-hmm. people should know. But in mm-hmm. other ways, it's bad because it seems like, you know, the creative types who are doing computer security these days, we all came from crazily different backgrounds. Philosophy guys, biostatisticians, mm-hmm. math people, mm-hmm. you know, all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I worried that as the discipline kind of becomes more mature, we might wash out some of the creativity of the early.
Well, there's a healthy debate right now, at least in business circles, as to whether we as a distinct capability outside of technical realms actually exist. Mm-hmm. Whether in order to be absorbed and to be assimilated in the way that security really needs to be, if we cease to be a distinct piece of security programs on the one hand and mm-hmm. IT programs on the other. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think we're already kind of seeing the beginnings of that.
If you look at
the way that commercial markets and security are evolving.
Yeah, we should talk about that a little bit. I was wondering mm-hmm. what your opinion is about the commercialization of computer security, because mm-hmm. you've been involved in this field for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And I think you've probably seen it shift from mostly spooks and, you know, national security stuff and defense stuff now into a pretty daggum huge business with more billions of dollars. What do you think? Is that good? Is it bad?
I think that in some ways it forces changes, and there are changes. I think you find folks going into security right now. It's been, as I think a lot of things are in early days, the strange hybrid of science and religion, and religious other sorts of religious beliefs. You have folks with very strong belief systems who don't respond with any that don't embrace basically movement.
Not much logic.
I mean, it's a very emotional sort of attachment to certain concepts and so forth.
Right.
And I think right now what we're seeing in terms of that market is that as defense and government didn't necessarily represent the bleeding edge of functionally using computers, they obviously invested very heavily in computers, mm-hmm. but the uses to which they placed those computers didn't necessarily reflect the interest of the broader scale commercial markets in particular. Mm-hmm. You're seeing security go through sort of the same evolution. Mm-hmm. You find folks now on the business side who are doing security in ways that I don't think was really on the on the drawing boards of the military and government folks, at least I dealt with during the 80s. I think it's good in some ways. There's some of the adaptations that that have been represented by this evolution forced by the commercial side. Not all of them are wonderful, though.
Well, of course, there's a fair amount of baloney thrown in there for good measure, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Buy our silver bullet, strap this pizza box to your pile, and all will be well.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, the collision of marketing with
reality.
Yeah, with, reality function.
So you played a pivotal role in the apprehension of Kevin Mitnick way back when, who has parlayed his fame as a convicted criminal into a lucrative consulting career. Mm-hmm. What was that time like back then?
Oh, it was insane. It was purely insane. I was in a situation where I knew a fair amount about the domain, about the investigative capabilities of all the parties involved. Mm-hmm. And also had a sense of what an actual successful apprehension represented, mm-hmm. In terms of a proof of concept, a very convincing proof of concept, both on the part of an adversary. I think to a degree that people believe that folks who allege that hackers were actually getting into these major systems were in some way delusional, mm-hmm. or victims of their own wishful thinking.
Right.
At the same time, too, I think folks who believe that a lot of the curative measures and the investigative measures and so forth were also similarly fluff. And
right.
I thought it was interesting and emblematic of a point where actually folks got to demonstrate that, yes, bad things were going on, mm-hmm. you know, where victims were actually compelled to come forward and characterize the nature of the problems that they had, but also that we were able to demonstrate that some of the things that were put forth as potential ways of apprehending someone, mm-hmm. Actually worked as well.
Yeah, so the rubber was meeting the road, so to speak.
Absolutely.
You know, the stuff had to work. You had to be able to look at those packets on the fly and figure out where that person was coming from, so to speak.
And absolutely. And it was out. And up until that point, there was a great deal of violent debate as to whether that was a workable scene, whether the capture and trace back was actually doable.
So what do you think about Mitnick's budding career as a consultant?
Hey, as long as he stays in the straight and narrow, as
you're
far
okay
as I'm
with
concerned,
that?
He's earned his, as I recall it, he got a sentence. He served it.
He did serve it, indeed.
And if the courts say that they're fine with that, then I'm fine with that.
Well, that's very interesting. So do you have strong feelings about the glorification of hackers in computer security, or are you just sort of, whatever?
I think they're always going to be part of almost an illicit pleasure in the same ways that I'll probably continue to read spy thrillers, even though I may not advocate someone spying on me or some entity I care about.
Right. So it's kind of nice as observed from a distance.
Yes, absolutely. it's an intriguing. I think that it represents a convergence of a human subversive pleasure, and a bit of an intellectual tickle as well.
I think that's right, and in fact, I think that black hat activities to some extent have a very important role to play in computer security, not necessarily as carried out by criminals, but certainly as part of any sort of assurance activities or whatever, while you're taking a look at a system that's been stood up, and so I'm wondering what your opinion is about those kinds of activities and whether we should describe and write about and publish things about attacks.
I think so. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me to attempt to constrain that information. I've never found the constraining of that information by design to actually work. I think that what it does is that virtually eliminates those folks who would be in a position to actually put forth a functional protection to actually enter into the fray. It's only when we got to a point where people were comfortable actually wading in knee-deep into the morass of vulnerabilities that we're able actually to isolate patterns.
Yeah, I when I first got started in computer security, only about, I guess, 12 years ago now, the research guys were still hoarding vulnerability information as if it were too radioactive to talk about and too secret to share. And I found that very disconcerting as a guy who wanted to study this stuff. Well, what are we supposed to study? We're supposed to just sit around and contemplate theories? Aren't we going to look at real stuff?
Well, I found it sort of entertaining. They could talk. I've cruised with a lot of folks who had preceded me in the business by a good 20 years. And to a degree, it became, I don't know, I think that they all acknowledged talking about real hacks, and it turns out that the vast majority were actually quite good hackers, much more elegant than most anything you and I see on the street these days. But also had a great deal of decorum built around their practices of discussing these with each other.
Right.
You would get knowing looks. I think you see the same sort of dynamic when you have crippies talking about various fundamental problems in crypto.
And it's just kind of a club, really. It involves knowing the vocabulary and having proven your stripes and being a member of the club and all that jazz.
Well, it is, and I think that dynamic actually remains in security. And frankly, I think it's healthy for security. There is a guild sort of feel, I think, at least among security practitioners on the commercial side. And I think that that's something that I would not be necessarily happy seeing. I wouldn't be happy seeing that set aside.
We have an awful lot to learn from each other. And in terms of sharing information about either events that are going on or possible vulnerabilities or even best practices when it comes to things like software security, there's still a ton of sharing that needs to go on.
Well, one interesting note to me was that I think the divulgence of attack information in general forced us to get a lot crisper about our characterization of vulnerabilities.
Right.
At the same time, though, I think that perhaps there is a bit of tension, there is a bit of friction involved in differentiating attack information or attacks, and publishing attacks for that matter, versus publishing the vulnerabilities that perhaps enable those attacks.
Well, I think, it's hard to do one without the other sometimes, or another way of putting it is when you do one, you sort of by caveat do the other.
Right.
But I think that one of the things we tried to do when we wrote Exploiting Software, we being Greg Hoglund and I, was get up above just talking about attack, and say, hey, can we pile these up into any sort of meaningful patterns? Is it true that when we go to one of these conferences and some old guy stands up and says, hey, we knew about that problem 45 years ago. What the hell are you guys talking about? Is that true? And it turns out, of course, it's true. And so I think that, you know, as a discipline in terms of managing the knowledge that we have, we do an okay job as a collective with our little myths and stories, but we don't do a very good job as academicians writing it down in a way that other people could use it if they aren't part of the club.
But I think at the same time, though, being able to lay things down in stone, as it were, is really important for us in a couple of specific instances I deal with kind of day-to-day in the commercial side. The first of those is actually looking at pushing the whole discipline forward. It makes a difference between me being able to actually educate someone over a 4 or 6 year academic program.
Right, as opposed to being an apprentice.
Well, and furthermore, being an apprentice that starts out, in a state that's maybe 25 years old. Versus the other area where I think this becomes absolutely critical is with the advent of things of value residing on computer systems,
right.
And with legal remedies.
Right.
I do a lot of business right now in the commercial. I mean, in the legal realm, in particular things
you
like intellectual
that book
property.
With Fred,
Yes, indeed. And that's actually what forced me to get real about the practice of security.
In fact, before we got started, I have to mention this. I broke my leg last week, and I'm on Percocet right now, which makes my questions particularly ridiculous. But when I was talking with Becky before we started, she said that one time back in the past when she was taking Vicodin for another problem that she had, it ended up making her write book proposals, and I suppose one of those was the book that we just mentioned. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Ironically, we were joking. Actually, it came up to almost a morbid joke. The first time this happened was by sheer coincidence. But I was trying to decide whether to write my first book on intrusion detection, and was suffering a great, a paralytic angst, and I had an abscessed tooth, and the endodontist couldn't get to it for a couple of days. So they gave me a fair snoot full of Vicodin, and to my great surprise, I absolutely positively had to get that proposal out of there.
Wrote the whole book, right?
I wrote it all out, sent it in, and the next morning wake up and go, oh my God.
They called up
the editor, and the editor said, that was perfect, that was absolutely brilliant, of course we're going to do this book.
Oh, that's great.
And the second one, the second one is I actually ironically developed a second abscess too, when Fred and I were muddling through the proposal.
So actually
for the
you're not
book.
Sure whether it's Vicodin or abscess teeth.
Well, in Fred's, in that case, I was grateful that Fred was there for the second book. It could have been really, really bizarre.
Well, you've had a big interest in women's issues over the years, and are especially active in creating opportunities for women in computer security. I was wondering if there are any organizations that you think are doing good advocacy work for women in the field, and where do we stand, kind of?
Well, we have one group that I love. I've worked with Joyce Bercaglia at Alta on the Executive Women's Forum, and this turned out to be just a fabulous organization. We're close to 200 women now, all are director level or above, on both sides of all sides of the aisle. We have some academics, we have some commercial solution providers, as well as commercial computer information security officers, risk officers, privacy officers. And it's turned out to be a fabulous organization in terms of just a fabulous Rolodex of folks.
Do you know the URL for that organization off the top of your head?
I think it's www.securitywomen.com.
Okay.
But also www.altaassociates.com
will
get you there as well.
We'll find it in the show links.
Indeed. It's a really, really fabulous organization.
Oh, that's great. I guess one sort of thing about your life as a VC. Now, what exactly do you do all day when you're...
Well, I'm not a VC per se. I am a venture consultant
for
a venture capital firm. Venture capitalists basically do they're investors. They're effectively folks who function as a bank, as a commercial bank might, except that they do things that by nature are higher risk, hopefully for higher return. So far, we've been fortunate in that this has been the case for Trident. And really good VCs, this was sort of a revelation to me, don't sit like Simon Legree and cackle wildly at the thoughts of impoverishing poor technical entrepreneurs, as a lot of folks think, but they actually spend a lot of time and energy exploring the nature of evolving markets.
Right.
And also exercise a fair amount of resource and guidance for entrepreneurs. I mean, the best of cases, a good VC is one who study the area, knows the market cold, does a good job of evolving of identifying fast evolving markets and then identifying the movers and shakers in those markets.
Right, and then getting behind them.
So I tend to be still very much at heart Japanese and connectionist, so this turned out to be as much a dream job as I could ever have.
Oh, that's great. I know you've been doing it for a while now.
Yes, absolutely.
One last completely unrelated question. What kind of music do you listen to?
Oh, goodness gracious, a total mishmash. And what I found entertaining is I have two preteen nephews who are a trip and also a joy of my life. And for Christmas, I usually play Santa Claus for them. For this year, I was Santa Claus, and we bought iPods.
Oh, cool.
And just for jollies, I just threw my, as a starting point, I threw my library onto theirs. Mm-hmm. And one of them comes to me and confesses that he's so thrilled because, this was a younger one, because I had both Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra on that. The other one came to me, and he was thrilled because I had a rather edgy group out of San Francisco called the Kinsey Six, who do very satirical, very gay humor, and Garrison Keillor, and the Prairie Home Companion. And apparently, so both of them found what they liked.
Somewhere in that
eclectic blend.
That's great.
But I tend to span quite a bit. I'm not much on hip-hop.
Do you have a favorite that you're listening to now that you just got? Anything come to mind?
Oh, heavens. Nothing in particular. I do an alarming amount of Frank Sinatra, as far as I'm concerned, seeing it as an impending sign of age.
Well, I think that's good. Well, thanks, Becky. This has been
okay.
Fun.
Cool. Thanks.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Sigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine. Subscribe today at www.computer.org/security/BSI-sub. Show notes, links, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.sigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.